And I'm not going to get into what was going on. If someone wants to ask me about it later, they're more than welcome to. But I had kind of some issues going on at work this week, kind of a mini crisis. It was not caused by me. It was caused by some others that made things difficult for me. But anyway, I was kind of late in this week actually getting to my sermon and my sermon title. But my sermon today was kind of inspired by a couple of high-profile suicides that happened this week. One was Anthony Bourdain, and the other one is a woman known as Kate Spade. She actually has a different name on her, you know, my understanding, on her birth certificate, death certificate. But Kate Spade was an American fashion designer and businesswoman. She was founder and former co-owner of the designer brand Kate Spade, New York. She passed away this week of suicide on June the 5th, 2018. To tell you the truth, I saw the headlines. I saw that Kate Spade had committed suicide. I had no idea who Kate Spade was. I understand that she, you know, from some of the stuff I read, she made some, one of the things she designed was purses, and Chelsea Clinton had a purse of hers or something. I've never bought a Kate Spade purse for candy. But anyway, I mean, it's a sad story. I mean, she had a child and she committed suicide this week. I was more familiar with Anthony Bourdain. I'm not actually, you know, it's not like I was a big fan of his. It's not as though I watched his program, but I have seen his program, Parts Unknown, advertised on CNN. So when I saw that he had died, and actually the first articles I saw is that Anthony Bourdain had died, and I knew he was a celebrity chef. I knew he had a show on CNN called Parts Unknown. He's, you know, and apparently he's a very famous celebrity chef, traveled all over the world, visited with some very famous people, including, you know, Barack Obama and many others and things like that. But anyway, I don't know a whole lot about him. I did do a little bit of reading and things about him since it happened. But I was aware of who he was and that he did have a show, and apparently he had shows on other channels before he had Parts Unknown. But one thing that kind of stands out to me when these type of things happen, and obviously it's sad, we hate to see anybody take their own life and anyone commit suicide, whether it's a famous celebrity or whether it's a local individual. But as this happens, there's these discussions that come up about mental illness. And apparently Kate Spade was being treated for mental illness. She was going to counseling, you know, before this happened, before she committed suicide. As far as Anthony Bourdain, I'm unaware if he was going to any counseling or anything like that. I do know that earlier in his life he had heroin addiction and things like that. My understanding is he had overcome some of those things. One thing interesting about Bourdain is he said he was raised without religion. Now he will say his father's side was Catholic and his mother's side was Jewish, but he wasn't taken to church growing up. He was raised without religion. He was a fan of Anthony Hitchens, that many of you may not have any idea who that is. He's a very famous atheist who's part of what's called the New Atheism. Hitchens, my understanding, passed away a few years ago, but he was a famous, you know, but he was a fan of Hitchens until he died, which leaves one to believe he leans more in the atheist direction. I don't know that he called himself an atheist. He definitely wasn't a big fan of religion. He wasn't very religious himself. He had no problem with religion and other people, except he had problems with religious fanatics and things like that. But these things happen, and the discussion comes up about mental illness and that we need to do a better job of treating mental illness. And with that, I do not disagree. I believe there is such a thing as mental illness, and I definitely believe that good people struggle with depression, and I think godly people can struggle with depression. I read a moment ago, and I intended to get somebody else to read, but for instance, Psalm 42 and 43 is written at a time When the psalmist is mournful, why are you cast down, O my soul, and why are you disquieted within me? In fact, the most common form of psalm in the Bible is what we call lament psalms. Most of the psalms, or a large proportion of the psalms, are written when people are downcast, and what we might say depressed. So the idea that godly people can never be sad is kind of, you know, completely opposite of Scripture and what you find in the Psalms. So this is all to say, my problem is not to say that, you know, when something like this happens, my problem is not in and of itself labeling it as a mental illness. As I said, Kate Spade was even being treated for mental illness. But my problem is thinking about mental illness in totally secular terms. That means kind of leaving spirituality, saying spirituality has nothing at all to do with this, spirituality can't say anything about this situation, that we're only going to, secular as opposed to religious. That secular is basically we deal with things without any discussion of spirituality, without any discussion of sin. We just look at it from a very scientific and this worldly standpoint. And I do want to point out, and this is kind of an aside, but I think it's worth mentioning. And it's not so much in recent times, but for much of the last 100 years and even more, there has been a great divide that has existed between psychology and religion. Sigmund Freud, who's called the father of psychology sometimes, and Jean Charcot and others, linked religion with neurosis. Sigmund Freud thought religion was bad. He was well-known atheist. He saw religion as what he called the future of an illusion. Even what's called the DSM-3, the DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So this is kind of what psychiatrists use to label mental disorders. As recently as the DSM-3 portrayed religion negatively by suggesting that religious and spiritual experiences were an example of psychopathology, which, in other words, it was a mental illness. Now, things have changed, you know, and actually, you know, now they're on the DSM-5, and then I remember taking some counseling courses back in the mid-90s. And there was a willingness in the mid-90s to see a relationship between, you know, therapy and spirituality, and thought that spirituality was an important dimension to take into account. So there are, you know, many mental health professionals out there that see religion and spirituality as something that can be a good thing, something that can be helpful. But there are also some mental health professionals that want to leave religion and spirituality completely out of the equation, and actually some of that goes back a long time. And all I'm trying to say this morning, and I'm going to, you know, obviously I'm going to have a fair amount to say, but my point is that there is sometimes a relationship between spirituality and mental health. That sometimes part of our issues can be spiritual issues. I'm not saying anytime somebody has a mental health problem that it's automatically a spiritual problem. I'm not saying that. I believe there is such a thing as mental health and mental health disorders. But I think sometimes that there are spiritual issues that can be involved. And sometimes our issues may even involve sin issues. But we live in a society today that doesn't want to talk about spirituality and certainly does not want to talk about sin. I'll give you some examples, and these are different. These are not suicides per se, although some of them killed themselves. But in 2009, when Nadal Hassan goes on to Fort Hood and kills 13 and injures over 30 more, you know, you go on the news media and they're talking about mental health and mental illness. In 2012, when James Egan Holmes sets off tear gas grenades and shot into an audience in a theater in Aurora, Colorado with multiple firearms and killed 12 people and injures 58 others, we say he had a mental illness. When Stephen Paddock of Mesquite, Nevada kills at a 2017 concert in Nevada, Las Vegas, kills 58 people and injures 851 others, we talk about it in terms of mental illness. Oftentimes in culture today, we don't talk about spirituality and we don't talk about sin. You know, if someone has an alcohol or a drug addiction or some other sort of addiction, we talk in terms of disease. And we don't talk in terms of spirituality, even though ironically to me, 12-step programs that have helped many people, you know, say that, the first thing is you know, the first step is to realize there's, I can't, you know, I have a problem I can't solve, and to realize that there is a power greater than myself that can help me. Now, I'm not surprised that a lot of times 12-step programs are looked at negatively today. And I've kind of, there's been a shift. And I think part of the reason many people look at them negatively is because there is a spiritual element to it. And we don't want to talk about spirituality, you know, and things like that. I mentioned a book, and I know Tom has too, by Carl Menninger, a famous psychologist at one time, but he wrote a book called Whatever Became of Sin. And he just pointed out in one book, and I think in actually later in his life, he kind of leaned more the other direction, but he realized that many people who came for them for counseling, that some of them not only had, you know, mental issues, that some of them also had sin issues. And yet he was saying, we don't talk about sin anymore. Again, I'm not saying that Christians cannot struggle with depression, or that if you struggle with depression, that means you're a bad Christian. I'm not saying that at all. I think that Christian people can struggle with depression and other forms of mental illness. But I do think when we are depressed, some of our problems sometimes can be spiritual. I'll give you an example talking about Anthony Bourdain. There's some people who, you know, as soon as he dies are quick to point to his atheism or apparent atheism and say things like, if he believed in God, he would not have committed suicide. And I would agree, maybe that's going too far, maybe that's an overreaction. On the other hand, I think there are people out there that are ready to say this is a mental health issue, it has nothing to do with spirituality, and give the impression if we could have just gotten him the right counseling or the right drugs, he would not have committed suicide. And I think the latter is just as wrong as the former. Or some would say everything has a spiritual answer and there is no such thing as mental illness. But there are others who would say everything has a secular answer and that spirituality has nothing to do with it. And I think that is wrong. I think it's going too far. I think when someone decides, and people will have problem with that word decides, but when someone decides to take their own life, I think there is often a spiritual component. I do think that we are spiritual beings, and I think that spirituality has an effect on a whole lot of things. And I want to give you an example of actually one of my favorite psychologists of the last 200 years, a man by the name of Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl, if you know anything about him, he was in the concentration camps during Nazi Germany. He suffered through the horrors of the concentration camps, and he was one of the survivors of the concentration camps. And many were killed. But he made the point that among those who were not killed, that there were many people in that situation that just gave up. which is kind of understanding, imagining the horrors of the concentration camp. But he made the point that the difference between those who gave up and those who survived, and when we're talking about those who survived, we're only talking about those who were not killed by the Nazis, that were not put to death. We're talking about those who gave up versus those who continued to try to live through this and to survive. But the difference between those who gave up and those who survived, he said, were those who found some sort of meaning in their life to help them to keep on keeping on. And so he wrote his most famous book in response to his experiences in the concentration camps, and it was entitled Man's Search for Meaning. And he suggested in that book that meaning is our deepest need. More than just, you know, passing happiness and finding joy in life and having something to keep me happy and things like that, that really our deepest need is for some sort of meaning and purpose in our life. And I would suggest to you that when we start talking about the meaning of life, we're really getting into what I would call spiritual issues. And we're really getting into things that are religious type questions. And so all I'm suggesting to you this morning is that there is an overlap between mental health and spirituality. Again, I'm not saying that all mental health issues are spiritual issues, but I do believe that many times there is an overlap between mental health and spirituality. I would even suggest to you that sometimes emotional pain can be a good thing if it's used correctly. A lot of times when we're, you know, when things are going good in life and we're happy-go-lucky and you know, not really depressed, everything's going good, we're upbeat in spirit and things like that, is not a time that we look deep within ourselves and do some self-examination. But on the other hand, when we go through trials and we go through depression, is some of the times that we can do some real soul-searching. And I think this whole idea even is biblical. I think of James chapter 1, verse 2, a great line. He says, "My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy." Or I think the King James is, "Count it but joy, brother, when you face various trials. But count it joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing." But there is a truth, and I could go to Hebrews, I could go to other places in the Bible, that sometimes when we grow the most is when we go through hard times and trials. Oftentimes we don't do the soul searching and we don't really grow in our lives when, you know, when the things are going smoothly and things are going good. And I'm not going to go into details or anything like that, but you know, one of the times I grew the most in my life is when I was going through divorce. Many of you know I went through divorce and things like that. My time and there was sin involved, some of it my own sin, some of it my own shortcomings, some of it my own failures. But it was one of the hardest things I ever went through in my life. But it was also a time I used it to turn to God and really did some soul searching and really did some honest looking at myself and really made some changes in my life. I think of, there's a famous line from C.S. Lewis. He says about pain, and this can apply, not, you know, this can definitely apply to emotional pain. He says, "Pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers in our pleasures, speaks in our consciences, but shouts in our pains. It is His megaphone to rouse a deaf world." And I guess my thought this morning and this week is, what if C.S. Lewis was right? What if at time God is speaking through our pains, and when we're going through hard times, it's a way of God using things to bring us closer to Himself? But what if we, instead of turning to God or looking for spiritual answers, we look for secular answers? Or what if they just invent a new drug that makes that pain go away? Is that really dealing with our need and with our problem? My point is that emotional pain can be a good thing. In the Psalms, and I go back to the Psalms, most of the Psalms are lament Psalms. I mean, a large number of them, larger than any other group of Psalms, are laments. And yet, what are people doing there? They're reaching out to God. They're crying out to God. They're depending upon God. They're leaning upon God. And I think sometimes it's when things aren't going so good that we're brought to our knees and we turn to God, and that in and of itself can, even in the bad, can be a good thing. Next thing I want to talk about it's a little three-letter word that's mentioned if you listen to the news that never gets brought into discussion, and it's the word sin. And I want to talk about that there can be a role of sin in many of our problems. And again, I'm not saying everything. I'm not saying that every problem somebody happens, that they're worse sinners than somebody else, or that it's because of their sin at all. But sin definitely can have an effect on our lives in many ways, and I think even sometimes emotionally. You know, the other side, I don't think just because someone's happy-go-lucky does not mean they're righteous. Just because someone has depression or some other mental struggles doesn't mean they're sinful. But I absolutely do believe that sin at times can play a part. There was an article last year, I guess a little bit less than a year ago, in August 24, 2016, an article in Psychology Today by a PhD by the name of Leon Seltzer. And I thought I had the title here, but I'm missing the title. But it's talking about the role of selfishness in many mental disorders. And he starts off his article saying, if you've ever been called self-absorbed, you can be sure you weren't getting a compliment. He goes on to say a little bit later, it's generally understood the concept is pretty much synonymous with self-preoccupied, self-centered, self-obsessed, and even egotistical and selfish. But I think more so the self-preoccupied, self-centered. And he goes on and kind of gets to the heart of his article a little bit later. He says, but what's most fascinating to me, and I'm quoting, I'm reading from his writing, but what's most fascinating to me here is that I haven't seen discussed by writers on the subject just how many psychological dysfunctions can be accurately understood as maladies of self-absorption. He's saying that many of these diagnoses that mental health providers give, a lot of their roots many times can be found in people who are self-absorbed. He says from a variety of phobic, anxiety, and obsessive-compulsive impairments to many depressive disturbances, including bipolar disorder, to various addictions, to post-traumatic stress disorder, and to most of the personality disorders, self-absorption can be seen as playing a major, if not dominant, role. So any effective treatment of these dysfunctions needs to include significantly reducing these obsessively self-centered and self-defeating tendencies. And I know I used a lot of words there, and he referred to a lot of different types of disorders. Some of them actually kind of stood out to me. I never thought of that having anything to do with being self-absorbed. But his point is, he was making, if we are people who are self-focused, it can lead to a lot of problems. And what kind of got me is he even mentions post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, and post-traumatic stress disorder, we're familiar with, I think, more so than some others, because we live in a, you know, around a military community, and that has to do when people go off to war, or sometimes it can be abuse when they're a child. But many times, you know, I'm more aware of it. People who go to war and see some horrendous things in warfare, and then they come back and they have a hard time dealing with that. But he even says that can sometimes be lead, or he mentions things like obsessive compulsive disorders and things like that. But he's just making the point that some of the problem many times in these sort of what we would call mental illnesses really has to do with too much focus in my life on myself, that sometimes being self-absorbed can play a role. You know, that there is a lot of times, again, you know, a sin component. And again, I'm not saying every time. And I'm not saying if you have a problem, don't get help. I think you should. And kind of the other side of this, I would say that oftentimes spiritual qualities can help us mentally. For example, humility. If we just have the ability to laugh at ourselves, that can be a very healthy thing. Or altruism. Altruism is helping others, reaching out to others. If we're focused on helping other people, I think generally that's going to lead to a more healthy mental health state. Or I think of the Christian teaching of hope. You know, Paul says faith, hope, and love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. That does not mean faith is unimportant. That does not mean that hope is unimportant. But this, you know, when we go through trials in this life, for us as Christians to have this hope that we, this hope beyond this life, can absolutely help us when we're going through hard times in this life. Or I would say even what I would call spirituality, but this dependence upon God. That dependence upon God is not a weakness. That actually dependence on God in our life is actually a source of great strength. And so, you know, again, I'm not suggesting this morning that you know, all our problems when we have mental issues, all the problems are sin problems. But my problem on the other side is we live in a society today where sin is not mentioned at all. And we don't even consider that this looking within ourselves and examining ourselves, which I think is a very important role in the whole process. A few things, again, I want to make clear. If you are depressed, and I'm, you know, we all go through depression from some time to other. I'm talking about severely depressed. I want you to reach out to somebody. You know, I'm not against suicide hotlines. I think those are good things. I'm not against mental health professionals. If you are hurting, then reach out. There's no shame in reaching out and admitting that you need some help. I just think that sometimes what we call mental disorders can have a spiritual component. And that spirituality and mental health oftentimes do overlap. And again, I'm not saying that if someone has a mental issue that you're a sinner or you're a worse sinner than those who don't. You don't need to be ashamed or embarrassed if you're having trouble. There's plenty of sinners, as I said, who are happy-go-lucky. It's happy-go-lucky. But I do think that we live in a fallen world. We live in a world where sin is pervasive. And sin can have an impact in a lot of negative ways on our life, even mentally. I look at my own life. You know, there's problems that are brought on from the outside. There are problems that we have no control over. But when I look at my own life, a lot of my own problems in my life are brought on by myself. And I think many of us can see that. You know, the trials we've gone through, sometimes it's external. But if I tell you the truth, looking at myself, if I could just get myself right, I'd alleviate a lot of the problems in my life. And that's just being honest. It's, you know, so I think there is this need to look inward. When someone walks into a movie theater and opens fire, I don't think we are just talking about a mental issue. I think we are talking about a moral issue. And I just don't want to take sin out of the whole equation. But as I close, I want to give two positive suggestions from the Bible before I close. And actually, both of them come from Philippians chapter 4. First one is verses 6 and 7, kind of a famous saying where Paul says, "Do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." And to tell you, I think that this passage is commonly misunderstood. I've heard some people say that worry is a sin, and that if you have worries, that's sinful and wrong. I think there's some times in our lives that we almost can't help but worry. You know, if we have a child that comes down with cancer, I think any parent in their right mind would have a little bit of fear and apprehension, and you could even call it worry. But I think what this passage is doing is telling us that when we have worries and anxieties, take those anxieties to God. Pray about it. Turn it over to God. And then the result is, after much time in prayer and turning it over and say, "God, I can't solve this. I don't know what to do. I'm turning it over to you." It's at that point in time which the peace that surpasses all understanding would come to us. And so I think this is the picture of the you know, Psalms, the laments and the Psalms, of all these psalmists taking their problems to God. That's what we're supposed to do. When it's not wrong to hurt, it's not wrong to go through trials, it's not wrong to have worries. What's wrong is when we don't lean upon God in those situations. We take those prayers and supplications and put it in God's hands. And I think that can be a source of great strength. That I do think that someone who does not have God is missing out on in their life. And then the very next verse is also a great thing I've thought about very many times. He says, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is anything of excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things." You know, in life we can focus on the negative or on the positive. And oftentimes in the best of times, there's going to be some bad. And even in the worst of times, there's some good. And I'm not talking this morning about being an optimist or a pessimist. I'm talking about in the realities of life that even in the midst of tragedies, you can often see some heroism and some goodness. And that to some degree, we have to choose what are we going to focus on. Because if you're going to focus on the trials and the hard things and the bad things, I mean, you can get a lot, you can focus on a lot of stuff and you can get down in a hurry. But if you try to see some good things, there will be some good there. And I just think this is powerful. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pleasing, if there is anything of excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. There are good people in the world. There are people that show kindness. There's good out there. And sometimes we get wrapped up in all the things that are going bad, and sometimes maybe we should focus on some of the good. If there's anyone that needs to come this morning, we invite you to come. All together we stand and we sing.